Occasionally, the sun vanishes. It comes back, but on the whole, this is a distressing event that allows for many vampires to emerge. But the sun isn't actually gone. My sources tell me that it merely went somewhere else, sunning another part of the world. Without question, this is intolerable, so what if we use a mirror in space to redirect that sunlight from there to here? A ridiculous idea right out of a movie, and indeed it somewhat reflects the plot of the 1971 James Bond movie, Diamonds Are Forever. But it works, and in the 1990s the Russians actually did it. In today's video I want to look at the solar space mirror idea and the experiment Zamania. The idea of using mirrors to reflect sunlight towards the Earth's surface has been around for a lot longer than you might at first think. The first semi-serious exploration of the concept was in the 1920s by a Romanian-born German rocket scientist pioneer named Hermann Oberth. In 1923, he wrote a book called The Rocket to Interplanetary Space. In it, he conceptualized a grid network of mirrors for focusing light on parts of the planet, particularly for weather engineering. For instance, he said that the light can be used to melt icebergs to open up the Arctic shipping lanes, don't need to do that anymore, or illuminating cities during the night, or preventing disasters. He wrote that solar reflectors could have prevented the Titanic tragedy because it would have let the crow's nest sighters spot the nefarious iceberg in time, though I feel like less drastic solutions could have been more helpful for that. He proposed a metallic sodium mirror about 5 micrometers thick. Such sodium is quite reflective and more environmentally benign if it falls out of orbit. To save on resources, he casually also proposed that the raw materials be mined out of the moon. The idea was later modified for military purposes, creating rather bombastic proposals like the Nazi sun gun, a space station with a 3.5 square mile light-focusing mirror orbiting 5,100 miles above the Earth. Crazy idea. The idea went dark for a while, but received renewed attention in the late 1960s and late 1970s. In 1968, Arthur Buckingham and Harold Watson of the Westinghouse Defense and Space Center explored the concept in a paper. With these solar mirror proposals, you have to select variables. How many mirrors you want, how big those mirrors need to be, how high up are you going to deploy them, and what level of illumination do you want? These are interrelated. For instance, you could put one 250-foot wide reflector about 22,400 miles above the Earth. At that orbit, the satellite would be geostationary, fixed to a single position on the Earth. This setup can illuminate a spot about 208 miles wide with an illumination at about 0.01 lux, which is about as bright as a quarter moon. This came out during the Vietnam War, and several private companies investigated it for use during the war, presumably to light up the jungles of Vietnam. However, the idea was eventually canned as American participation was then coming to a close. The idea received significantly more study in the 1970s. Throughout the 1970s, Dr. Kraft Ehrich, a famed German rocket engineer, proposed a series of space mirror ideas for several contexts ranging from agriculture, which he called agrisoleta, to nighttime illumination, which he called luneta. The power generation idea, branded power soleta, was probably the most economically feasible. The system involved a constellation of satellites orbiting around the Earth at medium Earth orbit, about 2,600 miles above the ground. It would reflect light down to a 1,200 square kilometer solar power site in Europe or other areas in the world. Even during the day, the mirrors can strengthen the intensity of the sunlight, boosting their generative power. Assuming that the panels have about 15% efficiency, very achievable, each solar power station could generate energy equivalent to 80 to 100 million tons of oil. One core issue was achieving the necessary illumination for solar power. Depending on the height of their orbit, at least 10 large mirror satellites would have been needed, and putting that much into space was seen as a challenge. There were other issues. Paying for and building these massive solar plants, plus distributing their power, would have been immensely capital-intensive. Moreover, some of the proposed orbits went through the Van Allen radiation belt, which would damage the satellites' long-term capability. Then, in the early 1980s, NASA Ames Research Center proposed the Solaris system. Early Solaris plans explored putting nearly 1,000 1-kilometer mirror satellites in orbit about 500 miles above the Earth to fuel massive 210-gigawatt power stations. A single such plant could have fueled the needs of the whole United States in 1981. This was seen as rather ambitious. Ames terminated the study in 1979, merging their work with that of a similar study at the Langley Research Center, or LARC, in Virginia. LARC commissioned a company, the Astro Research Corporation, to draw up the idea in more detail. This eventually led to a 1982 study by John Kennedy Jr. and John Allen Jr. that downscaled the old proposal. Instead, they found it more economically feasible to create a constellation of 16 1-kilometer-wide mirror satellites in geosynchronous orbit. Each satellite would be stuffed in an 11,000-kilogram package for launch via the space shuttle. But the shuttle can't reach geosynchronous orbit by itself, so after the satellite unstuffed itself, it would have to float up to that orbit by doubling as a solar sail. That would take like 10 months. The study concluded that such a constellation can illuminate a 200-mile-wide area with a light of intensity of about 8 lux. To compare, the full moon is anywhere from 0.1 lux to 0.32 lux. Office lighting is about 500 to 1,000 lux, so 8 lux is like a medium streetlight. It would basically replace such streetlights in America's big cities, extending the day by like an hour or two. The study's authors saw the constellation as being capable of illuminating urban areas during late rush hours or helping with winter work in Alaska. The total estimated cost was $1.3 billion in 1981 dollars, or about $3.4 billion today. Based on electric lighting costs, it would pay for itself in 5 years, not to mention the real non-monetary benefits of a few extra hours of daylight, especially during the winter. To be honest, I'm not against this. I loved how the sun went down at like 9 p.m. in Europe while I was there in the summer. The environmental impact of such a constellation was never deeply investigated, but a contractor reviewing the old Solaris project argued that it would turn the lit area into a massive heat island, creating tornadoes and hailstorms in neighboring areas. The Ames team vociferously protested this. Unfortunately, government funding never emerged for this proposal, and it never moved forward towards reality. Proposals in other countries met the same fate, except in one. The Soviets have long been interested in technological solutions to improve productivity. One area of focus was the Russian North. The land is known for its harsh weather. During the summer, the days are very long, but during the winter, the sun might be out for as little as a few hours. Thus, the idea of solar reflectors to light up the night. It would improve people's moods and allow farming and other economically productive activities. The idea came across the table of Vladimir Seromyatnikov, nicknamed the Big Cheese, a pioneering engineer in the Soviet space program. In the 1970s, he designed docking systems for manned spacecraft, and his system linked the American Apollo and Soviet Soyuz space capsules during the famous 1975 joint mission. An updated version was used in the Mir space station, and is still used for the International Space Station. Vladimir long wanted to build interplanetary solar sails to ride to the stars on radiation pressure, just like how sails ride the wind. But after the Soviet collapse, it was harder to get such an idea off the ground. So Vladimir seized on the space mirror idea. He pitched a space illumination system to several Russian state-owned companies, arguing that it would pay itself off within 2 to 3 years, if only by saving millions of tons of oil during the night. A natural gas exploration company thought it worth funding. They worked in the Jamberg gas field in the Arctic, the world's third largest, so the promise of more consistent lighting during the winter was tempting. With their support and others, Vladimir set up a consortium called Space Regatta. With about $10 million, or about $21 million today, they constructed an 88-pound satellite with a 65-foot sheet coated with a reflective coat of mylar or aluminium. It was called Znamya, or Banner. The first variant never intended to fly, so this was the second, Znamya 2. The mission was to test the space mirror's controllability and feasibility. The satellite would be carried up to the Mir station by an unmanned cargo robot spacecraft, part of a series named Progress, during a resupply mission in October 1992. After the robot spacecraft detaches from Mir, it would help unfurl the mirror banner and use it to reflect sunlight to the surface. Xenomia attracted substantial criticism, particularly from environmentalists. One professor at Britain's University of Strathclyde, Gareth Jones, called it a harebrained science fiction thought up by a bunch of crazy scientists. He compared it to the Russian mega project to redirect water to the desert, saying that it would devastate the ecosystem, melt the polar ice caps, and disrupt the mating patterns of birds such that the chicks would be born in the middle of winter and die. When asked about environmental concerns, Vladimir said that it was, quote, completely harmless ecologically, end quote. Nevertheless, he apparently shortened the length of the experiment and the strength of the light beam to accommodate these concerns. Xenomia's first test occurred in February 4, 1993. It went off without a hitch. The Progress spacecraft unfurled the mirror, spinning around like a daisy wheel, and it reflected a 2-mile-wide bright spot across Western Europe, moving at about 5 miles per second. It moved from southern France to Switzerland to Munich to Prague to then Belarus in about 8 minutes. People on the ground in the city of Toulouse in France at about 6:20 a.m. local prior to the sunrise said they saw a flashing light like a pulse from a star. A German weatherman saw the light shaft and said, quote, it was very bright and passed very quickly, end quote. Unfortunately, heavy cloud cover muffled the illumination. A ground station in Germany observed the reflected light to be equivalent to that of a single moon, though the Russians claimed it to be about 2 to 3 full moons. After finishing its mission, the satellite, with its banner, self-destructed via atmospheric re-entry as normal. Inside the flight control center, the mood was jubilant. Someone was recorded saying, this is not Xenomia, this is Phaethon's chariot. Probably not the best reference. In Greek mythology, Phaethon was the illegitimate son of Helios, the god personification of the sun. Phaethon asked if he could ride his pop's chariot. He grabs the reins, but cannot control the chariot, wreaking havoc on the earth. In the end, Zeus had to strike him dead with a lightning bolt. Vladimir hoped that the 1993 mission success could help him raise money for a new mission. He told the Moscow Times, the conditions in 1993 were not ideal, but despite the clouds, we proved that it is possible to imitate the moon and provide sunlight in the middle of the night. Further missions were planned, Xenomia 2.5 and 3. The 2.5 mission would put another 80-foot-wide foil mirror into space. This time, the mirror would stay up there for 24 hours, revolving around the Earth 16 times and shining light on cities from Canada to Kazakhstan. Shortly before the test, Vladimir told reporters, our mirror will look like the brightest star in the sky. You won't be able to look at it without squinting your eyes. Again, there were environmental concerns. The International Astronautical Union sent letters arguing that the mirror would generate light pollution that hurt, quote, astronautical observations, end quote. They added that the night sky should be preserved as a heritage to all humanity. And it was a difficult time for Russia financially, causing several postponements. They barely had money to send up essential supplies, let alone a mirror. But the rocket went up in November 1998. The test would be run a few months later in February 1999, after the unmanned supply ship undocked from the Mir space station. Observers in the Mir, as reported by the BBC, saw what happened next. The Xenomia mirror was stored in 8 drums on the Progress spacecraft's circumference. After undocking, the Progress would need to fly about 100 meters away from the mirror and then spin to unfurl the mirror. So they sent the automated command to the Progress to fire its thrusters and spin. But right then, they allowed another command be sent to the spacecraft to deploy a communications antenna normally used for docking maneuvers. That should not have happened, and the deployed antenna entangled and tore apart the 7-micrometer thin foil mirror. It could not be saved. The controllers down on Earth could do nothing but send the Progress and its torn mirror down into the Earth's atmosphere to burn. It was a horrible loss. Xenomia 2 cost $10 million and would have been only the start of a series of increasingly expensive missions that Vladimir wanted to do. Zenamia 3's mirror, scheduled for launch in 2000, would have been 220 feet wide, necessitating significant, expensive changes to the Progress spacecraft. Funding could not be secured for this next stage. After this failure, Vladimir wrote his memoirs, tried to develop solar sail technologies, and designed docking systems. He worked hard into his old age, passing away in 2006 at the age of 73, widely acknowledged as one of the great Soviet space scientists of his time. I want to thank the patron Gal for bringing Zenamia to my attention. Soon as I saw it, I knew I had to do it. Since Zenamia, there has not been much solid progress on the solar mirror front, but recently I came across a startup called Reflect Orbital on a YouTube channel called S3, and they were armed with a similar idea. The comments were properly skeptical, and to be honest, I was too, starting out. But nobody disputes the science, and the story of Zenamia's two test launches says that the idea has at least some bit of economic merit, though there seems to have been horrendously little work done on potential environmental or societal disruptions. Older proposals had to grapple with the outrageous costs of putting something into orbit. SpaceX's rise as a high-volume launch company may have changed that. Throw in the crashing costs of building solar farms, and I wonder if it might work this time. A guy can dream, right? Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.